Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, family. Hello, friends. Hello, world. Hello, listeners. Hello, everyone. That's the world. It's CG. The program is I'm Just Saying. It is Sunday. It is the 12th of February in the year 2012. And we're kind of opening on a fairly somber note. That would be because in less than 24 hours ago, the world heard of the passing of Whitney Houston. I don't know that there's anybody around now within the sound of my voice who's never heard of Whitney, but in case you haven't, Whitney Houston was a pop singer. Pop? Does she have to be a pop singer? She was a singer. And she, in her heyday, which actually was the middle 80s to the, I'll say middle 90s, she was at the top. She was the queen of pop, I think people used to like to say. And it is distressing news. And it happened last night, actually, Saturday, the 11th of February. On the eve of the Grammy Awards, I had intended to talk about the Grammys and really just have a light conversation about music and whatnot, as people say. But today I think we're going to do some talking about Whitney, or at least I'd like to do some talking about Whitney Houston. The chat room, let me see, I didn't actually open the chat room yet. I will get around to opening that in a minute. You know, in typical fashion, I'm having some problems with my switchboard. I don't know why there's always a problem with this thing. I try to log on early to avoid any problems, but it happens. So we're just going to forge ahead. I'm already prepared for the troubles. We already have the lines. We've got folks on the line, and we have the regulars. I'm going to bring in James. Good afternoon, James. How are you?
Good afternoon. Good morning.
Good morning for you. Okay.
Good morning for you. Good morning. Afternoon for you. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. How's it going?
Going well.
That's good.
Going well.
Glad to hear it. Okay. Glad to hear it. I'm probably going to start out pretty quickly here talking about Whitney. First of all, one of the problems that I was having with this switchboard, for whatever reasons, I was trying to load up at least one song because I don't have the premium account with Blog Talk Radio. I can only load so many audio files. And I don't know, it just wouldn't load. I had the thing, it was one of my favorite songs, or I shouldn't say favorite song, but it was a song that I thought was an excellent vocal performance by Whitney Houston. But we'll get into that in a second. Really what I want to do is get some of the staples out of the way. In other words, some of the things that I'm trying to make a regular feature on this program. Just want to cover those because I think they're important. And that would be the word of the day. Aha! Who would think I would lead with the word of the day or the word of the show or the word of the week? When we left off last week, I had said that the word of the day or the word of the week or the word to look up was oligarchy. Oligarchy. O-L-I-G-A-R-C-H-Y. Oligarchy. And I don't know, did I ask you? Oligarchy. Do you know what that means?
You asked me about the word oligarchy. I didn't even get a chance to look it up. So if you would please tell us and everybody on the show what that word means.
I will do that. And I'm using it, I didn't really think of it, you know. I didn't read it anywhere. It's just that I've been hearing it in the news, uttered mostly by a lot of Republicans. And so I'm like, okay, I've heard the word. It must be something negative, you know. It must be a negative word. It must have some sort of a negative connotation. So I looked it up. Oligarchy, folks, means... okay, what does it mean? It means a political system governed by a few people. It's a government by a few, especially by a small faction of persons or families. It's those making up such a government, and or it is a state governed by a few persons. So, oligarchy. A state governed by a few persons. And I guess why that comes into the news is because, well, they haven't used the word dictator with President Barack Obama. They've pretty much used the word socialist. But I guess, you know, they're just trying to say that he's just doing everything wrong. So whatever words they can throw into the mix to describe him and his presidency, that's what they're doing. So oligarchy, it's a government by a few people, okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome. And speaking of thanks and welcomes and all that, I want to thank you, James, for your participation in the program because you've been a good egg and you've been making appearances, and I really appreciate it. It's very much appreciated.
Well, thank you for having me as a co-host.
What was that last thing you said? I'm sorry.
Thank you for having me as a co-host.
Oh, hey, no problemo. No problemo. All right, so I was just going to throw in the next word for next week. Let's all look up the word recalcitrant. Recalcitrant. R-E-C-A-L-C-I-T-R-A-N-T. Recalcitrant. Okay? Got that. And another order of business. I don't even know what I just said at the beginning of the program. I was initially going to talk about the Grammy Awards. Yeah, I did say that. And it was going to be fairly light. You know, it's Grammy Award night tonight in the United States of America. And I was just going to talk about music and find out what people like and what they listen to and why they like it and who the favorite artists are and who you're rooting for. That kind of just light banter, that kind of thing. But I wanted to, or I should say, and at the same time, I wanted to tie in something Black History related because this is February and this is Black History Month. And James, let me digress for a second. Are you driving?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Because I'm hearing wind. Do you have windows open or something?
Oh,
I hear
no.
Wind.
The windows are all up. No, it's cold down here. The windows are up.
Okay.
Hold
well,
on.
I'll
fix it. Hold on.
Okay. Well, while you're fixing
that. Is that better?
No. Actually, that's worse.
What?
Actually, that's worse. But while you're fixing
Hello?
That.
Oh,
yeah. I don't. If you're talking to me, I don't know what you're saying.
Okay, is that better?
Actually, yeah, that's better. That is
okay.
So much better. That's better right there. Okay. I wanted to tie in a little Black History tidbit. Tie it into this being the Grammy Awards night. Okay, give me another second for this. Got a little distracted, didn't have something else ready because I was trying to upload that file, which I will get back to that in a second. Okay, what is this? Oh, there's so much going on right now, all because my computer, actually all because all because Blog Talk Radio won't work. Okay, wait a minute here. Let me see. What is this? That's not it.
No.
What is going on, people?
You're that girl like ABW.
Oh, that's right. Hey, and in the event the ABW is listening, what about ABW? ABW, folks, is the angry Black woman who was a frequent guest. She was actually a co-host of the program, and she's gone on to bigger and better things. And we miss her. We miss her, but she would do a friendly growl. A growl, but it was friendly. Okay. I have the information together that I was trying to get together. So the Black History tidbit that I wanted to tie in to the Grammy Awards and the world of music, it's a bit of a stretch, but we're going to make it work. We're stretching it, and we're sealing it in place, okay? Folks, I want to bring your attention to a gentleman named James E. West. All right, James E. West. In fact, his name is James Edward Maceo West. And it says on the Internet, this is all Internet stuff that I found, it says on the Internet, I'll read it verbatim, James E. West is perhaps known as perhaps best... No, James!
Yes.
I'm muting you because you're talking.
Oh,
and you're on the air. James E. West is perhaps best known, however, for his contributions to the foil electret microphone, which he co-invented with, it's either Gerard or Gerhard Sessler, in 1962. Nearly 90% of all microphones built today are based on the principles of the foil electret. In the electric microphone, thin sheets of polymer electric film are metal coated on one side to form the membrane of the movable plate capacitor that converts sound to electrical signals with high fidelity. Now, I know you all completely understood that, right? So the microphone became widely used because of its high performance, accuracy, and reliability, and in addition to its low cost, small size, and light weight. 90% of today's microphones are electric microphones. I'm not saying electric. I'm saying electret, E-L-E-C-T-R-E-T, okay? But, yeah, 90% of today's microphones are electret microphones, and they are used in everyday items such as, and here's the relevancy, telephones, camcorders, tape recorders, or audio recording devices. It is the most commonly used microphone in the world, and we can say thank you to James Edward Maceo West. And that, folks, is your Black History tidbit for today. So you've got that, you've got a new word, recalcitrant, and now one more thing I want to bring your attention to is I'm going to keep the name of the program, I'm just saying. But I might start to do something which I'm going to call the stream of consciousness, okay? Maybe I'm going to title the segment or those particular episodes or moments the SOC with CG. In other words, the stream of consciousness with CG. And a stream of consciousness for the literate folks out there, because, you know, I'm not going to say anybody's illiterate, but people in literature might be more aware of this term. It's just free-flowing thoughts, pretty much. That's what I'm going to go with, free-flowing thoughts, okay? And today, that may be the thing, because what I'm going to reveal for you folks is that I actually worked several years for Whitney Houston. So I know her a little bit. I don't know her like a sister, but, you know, I worked for her for 4 years. And so I am particularly saddened and down to hear this news about Whitney Houston. And it's, you know, I was thinking about, I'm still pretty much not even over the death of Michael Jackson, you know, and Michael Jackson was someone I never met. I mean, I did see him in concert once. But he was somebody that was always in my life. He's been in everybody's life. You know, he was there. It was almost like a family member. You know, we didn't know him, but there was Michael Jackson. He was always there. But again, that was someone that, you know, I was an observer like everybody. I was an observer of Michael Jackson. Here we have Whitney Houston, who, well, I'm not going to say she was at the level of Michael Jackson, but maybe just a slight notch lower. You know, she didn't have the longevity that Michael, as far as, you know, she didn't start as a young child, but Whitney's been around since the middle 80s, and I would have to say, though, that I'm actually observing her death and feeling her death, you know, from an inside perspective. And I'm not saying that to say, oh, look, I knew Whitney Houston. I mean, but the fact is, I knew Whitney Houston, and I worked for her. And it's interesting to hear the reports and how it's getting reported. We don't have the details. And I've wished this all the time for anybody and everybody, all the celebrities that we hear who pass, and you know, I don't know when we got into this era. I don't know when the era started of almost like trashing people and their lives and focusing on only the negative. But there's an element of that, just a very slight element so far that's gone on. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. I was listening to the radio. It was an ABC network, listening to the radio, and they reported, oh, Whitney Houston is dead. They did admit that they didn't know the details. And then the audio clip that they played was the infamous audio clip, and I'm really, really hating to bring our attention to it now, but I just kind of want to report what I was hearing. The only clip that ABC News, this radio broadcast, chose to use of Whitney Houston was the infamous interview that she had with Diane Sawyer in the 90s, where she exclaimed that crack is whack. And I was disappointed with ABC News. I'm disappointed, you know, I was thinking, if I was the news director, that is not the audio clip that I would have used. I would have just used something more positive, because what Whitney Houston gave to the world, and, you know, I think luckily we're in a time, obviously, where we have microphones created by James West where we can record her voice. So we will have her voice forever. We won't have her. We'll have her voice forever. But we're in a time where, you know, she gave more to the world than that one audio clip of saying that crack is whack. And I'm just disappointed that ABC would choose that bit of audio. I have a hand up, and I'm going to bring that person into the conversation. Hello there.
Hey, Carla, how you doing?
Hey. Hello? I'm good.
I know.
You want to introduce yourself, or what you want to do?
Yeah, I'm Butch Berry. And
of the Dead Horse Comedy Hour. No. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to know, because I know you work with her, how did you get the job working with her? I mean, could you just go into that a little bit?
Sure. I was actually in a bowling alley, bowling, and I saw a man.
Where was this? Where was this?
That was actually in Montvale, New Jersey. And I was actually, I was living in New Jersey. I had actually just moved from Los Angeles. And I saw a guy there who looked familiar to me. You know, it wasn't one of those, who is that guy? Ooh, I'd like to get to know him. It was just a guy that was there, and he looked familiar. And so I was kind of, I kept casting some glances at him, like, do I know him? Where have I seen him? Well, how could I know him? Because I did not know a lot of people at this point, you know, in New Jersey, because I was fairly new to New Jersey. And anyway, at some point I was at the counter.
I like how you sneaked in, how do I know?
Ah.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Clever. But anyway, so I think we were at the counter at the same time, and finally, whoever spoke first, I don't know, but I probably was me. It's like, do I know you from somewhere? Corny line. But he said he was thinking the same thing, and it turns out that it was Whitney's brother, Gary. And so it was possible that we may have bumped paths, you know, at some point in Los Angeles. But really, in that conversation, we didn't. We both admitted, well, no, I don't really think I know you. But
okay.
We decided to stay in touch. And at that point, he hadn't said who he was. He didn't say, oh, and I'm related to Whitney Houston. I think he might have said he's a singer and that he lived in Los Angeles and had business in L.A., et cetera. But he hadn't said
right.
who he was. So, you know, I didn't have any reason to, well, even if he had said that, I wouldn't have, I'm not the person that would be saying, ooh, 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 I must know you. But, yeah. So I met him. We did stay in touch. And at some point, he told me that they were starting Whitney Houston fan club. And they needed some help. They needed somebody to, I don't know, they just needed some help, type in some entries, et cetera. Did I want to do that? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, let's go on up there and see what's happening. So I did that.
Okay.
And that eventually became a full-time job.
Okay,
not,
so
you know,
what
you know,
happened when you first met Whitney Houston?
When I first met Whitney?
Right.
Well, I was a new person in the office, and she was up in the office bouncing around, just doing some business, whatever. And the makeup of the office was actually a circular office, okay?
Okay.
And so what I was doing was on one half of that circle. It was like I was like the only person on one half of the circle, and everybody else was on the other half of that circle. So I actually felt a little left out, and, you know, all the business would go on over there, and whenever she would come in the office, she didn't really have any reason to come over to my side. And that's actually because the man that officially hired me and who I was going to be working under actually suffered a stroke, a debilitating stroke, on the day that I started.
Wow.
So
okay.
So I was there virtually running the fan club without this man, and, you know, totally the new person on the block. Nobody knew me. But anyway, so one of these days, I finally just decided to go on the other side of the building. And I mean, it's a small office, but I'm just saying it was circular, so it's easy to just sort of be out of the loop, no pun intended.
Okay.
But she might have been coming out of the bathroom or somebody's office, and there was a little, just in the hallway. I said to myself, look, I really need to speak to her one day because I'm working here. So I just went up to her and I said, hey, Whitney, in case you don't know, I'm Carla, the new person. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, I know who you are. I said, oh, okay. And that was that, you know. I mean, it wasn't
okay,
anything.
How long did you work there, and what was the space between the day you were hired and the time you actually met her? Like, was it a couple of days,
a couple hours?
Maybe
a few weeks. But I did the unofficial work for probably about a year.
Okay.
And then officially, it was about 3 years. And I'm misspeaking. It was unofficially for about a year, and officially for about 4 years.
Okay.
And so it was a few weeks. You know, she was not. There was a tour that took place at the time, but you know, it wasn't like she was coming to the office every day. But she'd
right.
been there a few times. And I had I would say probably cowered and not introduce myself, right? I just didn't know. I mean, this is Whitney Houston, for crying out loud, you know? I mean,
okay,
even though I'm
so
in her employment, it's like, wow.
So you were running her fan club. What did that entail? I mean, what did you do?
Well, it certainly, it was a lot of fan mail. Yeah, there. You know, I was reading the fan mail. I had the authority to open and read the fan mail, and that's tons of fan mail, okay? And at some point, and again, like I said, the official, what was it, the manager of the fan club was out on sick leave. The man had had a stroke. So I was doing a lot of interacting with Whitney's father, John Houston, and it overall, it entailed keeping track of the members, finding new ways to get new members, and you know, shipping out the new membership packages, and also designing and creating merchandise for the fan club. You know, the t-shirts is the usual thing, and but we wanted to do more than that. And one of the things that I was really trying to get off the ground was a clock. Just a, you know, it was just a picture of Whitney and a clock. But it was a lot of mailing the photos and answering the fan mail. And, oh, my gosh, have I just revealed the secret of answering the fan mail? What that really entails is that, I mean, Whitney would look at a lot of them. Obviously, folks, you know, if there's anybody out there who feels that they should have, that she should have answered her mail, think about it. You know, we're talking lots. With hundreds of thousands of pieces of mail.
Wait a minute, hold on. So you mean to tell me she got a big sack of mail every day?
That was just big sack of mail every day. Yeah, and we'd pick it up from a post office.
Can you give us a sense of what kind of fan mail you got? I mean, you know, for the fans?
A lot of it was from 8 to 10-year-old girls.
Okay.
A lot of it was from males of all ages. A lot of it was from overseas, like Japan was a popular place. There were folks who, you know, there were stalkers. There were real stalkers. There were real law enforcement agents put in place, even for the office.
There wasn't a letter from Osama bin Laden, was it? Because I heard he was a fan. You didn't come across anything like that,
right? Not at the time I was there. No, not at the time I was there. Not at the time I was there. And let me just say this. We've got about 2 minutes for the live broadcast, but in the past we've had some extra time. Actually,
mm-hmm.
This is saying like 90 seconds, but we should be able to continue on. Just for anybody who wants to hear the rest of this, call in now, 646-716-4732, and you'll be able to just hear the conversation over the phone. And I want to thank, you know, James, I know we're just not saying a whole lot here, but everybody else who is on the phone, thanks for listening, and, you know, go ahead, Butch. But, you know, I don't mind answering the questions.
Okay. Okay, so hold on. What does that mean? We have to...
No, I'm saying if as long as we stay on the phone...
Sign off or something?
No, as long as we stay on the phone, the live stream will go off, but we're still good.
Oh, okay. Okay, can you talk about some of the wackos who wrote Whitney Houston?
Yeah, I won't name this guy. I mean, if there's anybody out there who knew the situation, I'm not going to give him a name. I have no idea whatever happened to this guy. But there was a fellow from England who, I mean, this guy called pretty much every day. He literally was in an insane asylum.
Whoa.
And, but he lived in England, and for the most part, he... In theory, he was harmless, but if there if there was a way for him to get out of England and show up on the doorstep, he probably would have. But
wow,
there were, like
okay.
I said, there were definitely there was law enforcement on hand, pretty much to protect her and everybody. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So there was, and actually there was someone who showed up, I want to say from Sweden. I kind of don't remember. But there actually was someone who showed up in town and had found a hotel room nearby, like within a block of the office. But it was kind of like, I don't know, Secret Service. You know, they were on to him. I guess you could be on to him because he pretty much announced himself. But honestly, there was a time where I was rather uncomfortable because, like I said, the office was circular shaped. I was on the, 12-3 side. Everybody else was on that 9-12 side. And so I just felt like, oh, my gosh, if this guy shows up, he's going to get on my side and I don't have the protection because everybody's going to be protected on the other side. So if there was any concerns, it was mostly just getting to work and leaving work because a lot of people knew where the office was and, you know, actually a lot of people did not show up. Once in a while, someone would show up, but it was really honest. You know, this was before 2001,
okay.
when people really started becoming crazy.
Okay, I mean, did any celebrities show up at the, or they
Definitely.
Just went directly to the office? They didn't come to the fan club.
Well, they didn't come to the fan club, but when I knew someone was coming in, I made it a point to be around. Two people that I was very excited to meet, Quincy Jones and L.A. Reid. Who
okay.
is now on, what is that? Which one is that? The X Factor?
Yes.
Is that the one he's on now? Yeah.
I think, isn't
because
he the
I,
only
you know,
one who didn't get fired?
Right. He did not get fired. Yeah. But Quincy Jones, I mean, you know, Quincy Jones is like, wow, this is Quincy Jones. I couldn't believe I was meeting Quincy Jones. And really the same with L.A. Reid. He just, in my opinion, you know, L.A. Reid is just phenomenal in music as far as picking talent, et cetera. I enjoyed his music and was excited to meet L.A. Reid. And, I mean, you know, yes, there were a lot of celebrities that would come in. I had an opportunity. There were a couple of parties that I went to at Whitney's house with all the celebrities. I remember Mike Tyson was one at the time, and you know, all the people, I will say this, including Whitney, and people, we always have to remind people that celebrities are people, too. So they have, they're people, too. You know, they party like the rest of us. They talk like the rest of us. They act like the rest of us. They say the same words that the rest of us say. They laugh like we do, you know.
Right.
So it was fun to see Mike Tyson, and what I was going to say was that he was a nice guy. He was very, very soft-spoken and not like I think people would think he is because he just gets that bad rap for whatever he's done. And like I said, in this era of focusing on really negative behavior, you know, everybody thinks Mike Tyson is some crazy individual, which maybe he could be. But in the times that I met him and saw him in a normal environment, he was okay, as was everybody else. And what I would say, I just want to say this about Whitney Houston. I don't know what. Actually, there was an interview that was done with her long before that Diane Sawyer one. But they'd done an interview with Whitney. I don't know, whatever, in the early 90s. And it depicted Whitney Houston as, you know, just a very silly kind of a person, and a goofy, just a playful person. And that's what I saw on those occasions that she was up at the office, and those couple of times that I was at her home. You know, there was a tradition of having either Thanksgiving or Christmas dinners at the office, and Whitney would come up there and she would eat with us, and we were all there, and it was a fun thing.
Right.
You know, there was no pretense, and why should there be? You know, she's most of the people that were in the office, I shouldn't say most, but a few of the people that were in the office were her relatives, number one. So she might as well feel comfortable around them. And then the other folks that were there, I would say excluding me, you know, she had known for several years. So it was family. And but it was fun. And she was funny and full of jokes. And it's too bad, you know, that spirit is gone for those who knew her and knew that about her.
Right. What about were you there when she was getting into movies?
Yes.
Okay. So what? How was that transition? I mean, did you? Did the fan mail change? Did she have to? I mean, what changes were there?
There really weren't that many changes as far as the movies, when the movie started. Just everybody was actually excited for her. I mean, I will say this. I mean, we all know this, and this is, it's negative, but, I mean, it was common knowledge that the fan mail did change when she married Bobby Brown. You know, a lot of people were upset, and they didn't like Bobby, and it again, at the time, it more stemmed from, oh, now she's married and people couldn't fantasize. I mean, you know, guys couldn't fantasize about her being their wife, you know, in a simple fantasy way. I don't mean that creepy pervert fantasy way, you know, and girls, they just thought that Bobby was a little rough because of the reputation he had with, you know, multiple children and all that. I mean, it was like, oh, why did you marry him? So there was, for a period of time, there was some negativity. I think pretty much until they had Bobby Christina, and then it was focused on Bobby Christina, and everybody was happy for the baby, or happy that Whitney had a baby. But as far as the movies go, it was there was a screening. We all were invited to the screening of The Bodyguard, and
right.
Clive Davis was there. And again, you know, you might work with these folks. I'll say from my perspective, I work with these people. You see them all the time, and I've not ever been one to be starstruck. Really, when you're seeing the legends, you know, I think it's reasonable, you know, and you're like,
uh-huh.
Wow, that's Clive Davis. Wow, there's Clive Davis. But we saw the film, and it wasn't really. I can't say it was like watching home movies, but again, it was a setting. It was a private. It was just in an office, and it was in a screening room. Not in an office, but it was, I guess, at Arista, and there were a lot of jokes. It was a lot. It was one of those things where everybody's talking to the screen and making little snaps and cracks about Whitney and her acting, and she was making them as well. And I mean, it was a fun time. You know, that movie screening was fun.
So what kind of things were being said? What did she say about her own acting?
I'm trying to think of just some of the scenes. Well, the end of the movie, when she jumps off the plane and goes running after Kevin Costner, of course, yeah, she was just making jokes. And I mean, I can't remember specifically, I'm sorry, but just laughing at herself and look at that little sissy run, or, you know, just some girly run, and, oh, what's with the scarf, and just goofiness. again, the goofiness and the syrupiness, laughing at how syrupy that whole movie actually was.
Right.
And then, of course, there were little jokes and murmurs about the love scene, and I don't know if folks remember this, but there's a sword that's being bandied about when, I don't know if it's, hey, look, I actually haven't seen The Bodyguard multiple times. I've seen it a couple times, but not many, many, many to give it to you scene by scene. But
right.
She's got a sword or something, and she's playing around with it with a scarf, and he's coming near her, and that might be when they kiss, or maybe they don't kiss. I don't know. But she's laughing about how she's handling the scar, the sword, and laughing about, like, little girls snickering at watching herself on the film, ready to kiss Kevin Costner. You know?
Okay.
So, and I remember MC Light, I believe it was MC Light was there, and I know MC Light has been somebody that they've been talking to on the news. If MC Light wasn't there, she was just at some other functions, but I think MC Light was there, and I was going to say Perry McKissick, also known as Pebbles, if we remember Pebbles. Yeah.
Right.
So those are her little friends at the time. And it really was just like little girls just snickering and hee-heeing at the movie. It was cute.
Right.
It was cute. Yeah. So, anyway.
Oh, what about the, now do you know if had they started filming the remake of Sparkle?
See, I thought they had. I thought that they had started the remake of it, but maybe they hadn't.
Okay.
I know, what an answer, right? But I was under the impression that maybe Whitney's part hadn't started, but I think in general, I was under the impression that production had started. So,
okay.
I don't know that for certain.
I thought for sure that was, you know, going to bring her entirely back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I want to say this, too, about Whitney. She was definitely, the business people that she had behind her, she was still doing well because Whitney was knowledgeable enough, and maybe Clive had something to do with this. Whitney was producer on... Certainly I Will Always Love You, and I'm not sure, I don't really remember this, if it was the entire soundtrack of The Bodyguard, but she had also gotten into producing the, at least movies made for television, you know, the Cinderella remake with Brandy.
Right. Yeah.
And I'm saying that to say that, I don't want to, shrewd businesswoman. I don't know if that's necessarily appropriate, but she was doing well business-wise because, as many folks know, when you're producer of a movie or a record or anything, you know, and you work out the deal properly, you do well financially. And that's,
right.
Whitney had that going, and that was a good thing. And again, I was actually proud that she was thinking in that direction, you know, that she was, whether she thought of it on her own or if people suggested to her and she was open to it, I think that was good for her, and I'm proud that Whitney did that, you know.
That
puts her in the category of black women doing good things in the entertainment industry.
All right.
So, yeah. Just wanted to throw that out there. And also, because I'm looking at the clock here, about 6 minutes to go before it actually does cut off, two of the songs that I think are excellent performances of her voice, one of them is called Lover for Life, and that was on the I'm Your Baby Tonight album, and I just think, folks, check that one out. And what makes it great for me, why I enjoy it, it's just a great performance, a great vocal performance, is because she goes I don't know, to say it like she's all over the place, that doesn't quite sound right. But the notes are, she goes from high to low to middle. You know, the way that song is written musically, but she hits every note. She doesn't slide into a note. She's on it, and it just goes